Welcome back to DC Cinematic Minute, the daily podcast in which we analyze Zack Snyder's Justice League by each individual minute. My name is Mark. You can find me on all social media at Mark Meadows.
And my name is Nathan. You can find me on all social media at No Clutch Nate.
And I'm Scott Carelli from DuelingGenre.com.
And so many things within that those two words, dueling genre.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Got to parse it out over the week, right?
Yeah, exactly. Scott, thank you for joining us this week as we reach, I guess, I assume this is the climax of the movie. There's still so much more to talk about. We're here at minute 206 of Zack Snyder's Justice League. It's going to start with Wonder Woman peering into this boom tube, and then the minute is going to end with the Flash struggling to not be eviscerated by the unity as it has actually been achieved, and it is going to obliterate the Earth. But yeah, Scott, welcome aboard.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Welcome back.
Yep.
Yeah. We have another, almost 40 minutes left of the movie, but in this week, we'll be talking about the climax of this third act, part six, Something Darker. And Scott, last time you were on DC Cinematic Minute, it was technically for Suicide Squad Minute, which was a long time ago.
Wow.
When we talked about Cara Delevingne's Enchantress, and we talked about at the time the Snyder Cut was not confirmed or anything like that, but there was also a push for the Ayer Cut. Mm-hmm. And that was the last time we spoke about that. But we also did a bonus episode where we talked about the Flash movie.
Right.
And now here we are again talking about Zack Snyder's Justice League. It's been an uphill battle for Nathan and I to to analyze this movie and get through it all. But Scott, I wanted to kind of ask you over, since the last time we've met and talking about Suicide Squad, and then up until now, you've now seen Justice League and Zack Snyder's Justice League. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about your personal experience with this film.
it's basically the same one that I think Nick Jimenez talked about when he was on, because we literally watched it sitting next to each other in our apartment. We were ready, you know, we like strapped in, like as it was about to come out. I think we rewatched Man of Steel. I still don't like that movie. Sorry, everyone. And we watched Dawn of Justice Ultimate Edition, which, if I remember correctly, Nick had seen before, but like that was the first time he watched it that he was like, "Oh, that really works for me now." I remember us having that conversation. I was like, "See, I told you, it's way better." And then we watched this like the next morning, like when it dropped. Mm-hmm. We just sort of like devoted the day to it. Because you kind of have to. It's 4 hours.
You kind of have to. I was gonna say you kind of have to sometimes.
It was great. You know, it was great to see to have this sort of like complete trilogy of films. In terms of like, you know, what his vision was for these characters and this world is pretty interesting. There's stuff in it that I don't like, but there's also a lot of stuff in it that I really like. It's a mixed bag, but not nearly the mixed bag that the theatrical cut was. This is much more, this feels like an actual, like, you know, there was a vision behind this movie.
They packed the bag with purpose.
Yes, absolutely.
Not just like, you know, 20 pairs of underwear because we're crazy people and we think we need that many pairs of underwear on vacation. What's wrong with us?
You never know, man. You never know. You might get Your flight might get canceled. You might be stuck somewhere. You might be like, I might have to do laundry.
Mark, now, how many pairs of underwear did you go through at the airport last week? Like, that's really going to give us the whole world the answer.
Yeah, it was a nervous wreck, so it was a lot. No, I'm good. But I was going to say, I think that's what I've come to the realization having watched it so many times and like going minute by minute through this movie is that, just as a statement, there is a lot of stuff in it. So I think that lends itself to being like, there's a lot of things I don't like. And there's a lot of things I do like because there's just a lot of things in it.
Right.
And as we've gone through it, it's just like, oh, that really hurts the movie there. I wish it wasn't in it and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And when, you know, even thinking about it in the context of there's an epilogue in this movie, which is like the first Justice League of three to have 40 more minutes of like, oh, other things will happen. It's like, yes, I know this is kind of the last, it starts, but also ends right here. So they kind of have to, he wanted to put all this stuff towards the end of the movie, but it's also just seems weird of like,
yeah,
it doesn't make it any better. Just kind of puts everything in there.
Yeah, I feel like his thought process there was probably like, oh, you know, maybe this will be a huge hit and they'll let me keep making them for like HBO Max as like a TV series or something. Mm-hmm. And that's probably why he did that. But I think, and you know, no one at Warner Brothers was going to tell him no at that point. So yeah. I think he should have closed every loop on this movie and just let it be its own thing instead of leaving it open ended because it just, it's caused so much strife at this point, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. There's still people out there who think that Netflix is going to buy it. And it's like, guys, it's just never going to happen.
It's No,
it's just not. And, it, you know, it's sad. Like, I get it. Like, let's, you know, RIP, you know, let's, yeah, you know, let's, you know, press R to pay respects or whatever it is. But like, yeah, I don't know. It's, I'm glad that it exists. I'm glad that his complete vision is out there, you know, and I respect it. I still think that Dawn of Justice is my favorite of the three.
Mm-hmm.
Probably, I wouldn't say by a country mile because there is a lot of stuff. There's surprising stuff in this that I wasn't expecting from Zack Snyder, like really like heartfelt, you know, old school DC stuff of like characters being like, you know, talking about love and caring about each other and having each other's back. And that's not stuff that you see in Dawn of Justice. And so I just was surprised that it was here, but it's cool that it's here. It's what I love about DC. So it was nice.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, obviously in this minute that we're going to be talking about here today, one of the characters that we get treated to in this version of the film being Darkseid, it fulfills something that we, as DC fans, we've always wanted to see these big Justice League villains show up. Even, you know, the Suicide Squad, seeing Starro, it's just like, yes, thank you. I want to see stuff like this all the time in these movies. And of course, everyone can have their different visions, but just having the characters in these movies, having these big moments with these characters that we love reading about in comics, seeing it just makes it a complete joy. And so whether it's, you know, Dawn of Justice or Justice League, they to me, yes, they're both the vision of Zack Snyder, but kind of tonally different sometimes, where mm-hmm. this one can just be a fun adventure sometimes, and there's even some like classic Warner Brothers DC like campiness to this movie that I just really enjoy. But then, yeah, I want to switch back to Dawn of Justice. But like in this movie here, like you said, they at this point, they were letting Zack just do everything with this version. People have been asking for it. They saw a way to market HBO Max with it and put this on there. And then I just kind of was thinking like they at the time of 2017, they really were just thinking we're not going to do another Justice League movie, even though they kind of, you know, Frankenstein monster this Justice League into what it was and Joss Whedon being involved with it. They wanted to kind of salvage this movie, mm-hmm. but then completely kind of like neuter it in the way that it just wasn't going, there was no sequel planned for it because they cut Darkseid out and said, we're not going to tease anything for the next film. We'll just completely reboot it with the Flash, which I think was the plan for the longest time until we saw the movie. And then I'm still unsure if the Flash was the movie, the Flash was ever going to be used for that. It was very confusing walking out of that theater. But yes, thoughts on Darkseid, people. He's here. You get the boom tube shot, Wonder Woman looking up into it. You get Grandy Goodness and Desaad there as well. But what are the thoughts on Apocalypse now that we're here?
This is like the best like tease that they could have done. And at the end of the day, I think I am just happy that this image exists.
I really like Darkseid. I really love the New Gods and Apocalypse and all of that stuff. New Genesis. I really love that world. I look at that image and I'm like, yeah, that's definitely Darkseid. But like, I don't know. I get that that's supposed to be Desaad and Granny Goodness, but I just feel like their vibes are off personally. And I get it. It's because like, who's playing them? No one, not really, you know?
No one, yeah.
Yeah. But it's just like, well, if no one's going to play them, then like, why are they there? And it's like, they're there because Zach is like, this might be my only chance. So here they are. And I'm like, fair enough. But also like, I don't know, man, like I don't know. I wish it was just Darkseid. I also think it's a little too, I don't know. It's not as apocalyptic looking over there. It just looks like a throne room, in a way that I'm like, not really, that doesn't scream Darkseid and Apocalypse and New Gods to me, but
not as much as like in Dawn of Justice, when you see the nightmare dream and there are like the fire pits.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah.
So like you think you'd landscape would have helped, would have been better?
I think so. Yeah. I think so. Like, I think it would have been cool if he was on like a cliffside overlooking Apocalypse and you see the pits and you see the army of like everyone in Apocalypse and he's like standing over and then he turns around and is like, yeah, here I come with all these guys.
I mean, that would have made way more sense because it's like they're preparing for the invasion. Get everybody outside, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. Right. But instead we get
the cabs
this like
are here.
Yeah. We just get this weird, like kind of like vaguely reddish Game of Thrones scene that I'm just not vibing with.
You know what? Now that I'm like seeing it, it kind of reminds me of like a theme park ride. With just the people standing on the screen and they're just ominous and you're like, oh, yes. And you know, the track takes you into the other direction. That's kind of what I'm feeling now, in this moment.
And the Granny Goodness and Desaad, that's what they remind me of. They remind me of like theme park versions of those characters.
Yeah, the cameos. Not,
not real movie versions.
Dang.
Yeah.
Dang.
Sorry.
No, the veil's gone.
Yeah. Totally. And it is kind of surprising that you know, Ray Porter, Peter Guinness, the people who played Desaad and Darkseid respectively, they did the performance capture, motion capture. So it's like there are people playing it, which is nice, but it doesn't, there's not much to it, right? Like they're filming these bits and I appreciate the effort, but there's not much more than that. But it's the Granny Goodness part has always been like, is that supposed to be Judi Dench? Like, I'm not saying that. Like, it just seems like, what was the inspiration between, you know, creating this Granny Goodness character, where it's almost uncanny in this way of like, you didn't fully commit to like some weird version of Granny Goodness, but you also just made it like this really tall old lady. And it begs more questions, right? Like, it just, now what's going on here? What is her deal?
She doesn't even look that old. Like, she honestly, I'll be honest, like, because they gray out her face because they don't want you to see an actress there. They just, just in case, right? He can go and make the movie, and then he can cast whoever he wants as Granny Goodness. Yeah. But like, yeah, I don't know. Like, she just looks like Jane Lynch or something. Like, she just she looks blonde, to be honest. Like, she doesn't even really look like she's got like silver hair. It just doesn't.
Gwendolyn Christie kind of like.
Yeah, and not for nothing. But like, Granny Goodness isn't supposed to look intimidating. Like, Granny Goodness is her intimidation comes from her personality and like who she is, not what she looks like. And here he's like, yeah, but what if she had like huge shoulders and like was 6 feet tall and, you know, whatever, was like probably a lost Amazon or something. I don't know. I don't know what his plan was for Granny Goodness, but like, that's the vibe. And it's just not, I don't know. It's she almost looks like Annette Bening, actually. Every time she turns around, she looks like a different actress to me.
It's the Rorschach of the shaded face. Just every time you look, you're like, oh, okay, someone else. Yeah. But knowing Zack Snyder, he probably was like 100%, oh, I have an idea of who I would cast as Grant. Because he always seems to like have someone in mind specifically for every single character. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Darkseid's here, Desaad's here, Granny Goodness is here. We have this whole Apocalypse throne room that's being revealed to the Justice League. And of course, Steppenwolf with one horn removed, thanks to Superman. He's here. He's like, Darkseid, he's here. He's arrived. And you hear this kind of unity click in place and kind of explode. But we get kind of a shot from Batman. He's on top of this little reactor. And he does like this grappling shot, and it's, to me, it's a very kind of Justice League Batman. We've talked a little bit about there's like always different versions of Batman, and this second or in this sixth part, he's very much just like your Justice League action figure Batman. The way he looks, the way he operates, it totally seems not what Ben Affleck signed up for, but he's here doing it, and I like the silhouette. I like kind of the action figure look of the Batman, but it's like, okay, he's here. So, I always liked the way Batman was in Dawn of Justice. I've always liked his kind of fish out of water, but like really kind of, how would you say? Like he's a little bit more, I would say more Rambo in a sense of like, I'm working with what I got here, but in this one, he's got like everything planned. He's got everything in the armor suit now.
It feels like a big jump, right? Like this is how you would expect Batman to be in like the second Justice League movie, but not the first one. Like the first one, he should be barely keeping up. Like, wow, I was not prepared for everything we're going to have to be dealing with as this group that I'm putting together. It was my idea, but I was not expecting all of this. I don't know. All of the gadgets and weird, like that's just not who he was in the last movie. So it's very, it still feels like a correction, you know, like it feels like, from the studio being like, hey, can you make him more of like an action figure Batman, like more of like a lovable, huggable Batman? That's what everybody seems like they want. It's like a Kevin Conroy. It seems like this is sort of the Zack Snyder version of, you know, Justice League Unlimited Batman, you know?
Yeah.
But it doesn't, I don't want to say it doesn't work. It's just like, it feels a little unearned, you know?
Yeah. We've talked a little bit about, the Batman that we've gotten in this final act, it really has felt like a jump. And I think we talked about that with, just all the pieces of armor that he's put on. You know, he started with like the gauntlets a little bit, and he was like, oh, look, the energy is dissipating. But then all of a sudden he's got this whole new suit with all these, you know, the goggles on, and then the Batmobile has like six guns on it. And it just seems like, there's a battle here in Prizhornov, but then what does it look like when you go to Apocalypse? Because you also had the Nightcrawler, and then that got taken out. And there just seems to be so many toys in this movie. And the Flying Fox was another one. And we really dug into that one because it's like the Flying Fox had one job for like a few minutes, and they hyped it up the entire movie, and he crashes it. But then it's like, oh, so does that come, would that even be in the next movie? And
well, it was, because it was in Flash.
I'm sorry, what?
They had the flying fox in the movie The Flash. In the beginning, Batman part in the beginning, he jumps out of the flying fox on the highway with his motorcycle, and it's another new toy that he's got. He's got the motorcycle in that one. Sorry, this isn't Flash Minute. We're not doing that, but
thank God. Question though, is the maybe you guys don't remember because God knows when the last time was you watched it. Was the flying fox destroyed in the theatrical cut of Justice League? Because that is what that's what Flash is a sequel to, technically, mm-hmm. not this.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, because it always happens that the parademons rip open the door, and the Batmobile flies out of it.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, so he flies in, he attacks the tower, he breaks the tower, crashes the flying fox. So,
all right. Well, they were just devoid of any ideas on the Flash. Yeah,
also,
was clear.
We never thought, Mark, you and I never thought during that entire flying fox discussion that Batman would just either A, buy a new one or make a new one like the next day. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Why spend a whole other movie? Oh, no, it gets Alfred to fix it, because in this universe, it's Alfred fixing almost everything.
Like, we've always assumed that there's just like one. It's like, well, hang on. Wouldn't he buy a bunch?
Yeah.
I think that's the other thing that bothers me about all the Batman stuff in this is that, like, that's something you can do in a comic book and a cartoon, like Batman just having unlimited money. That's not reality, though. And as soon as I'm watching a movie, I feel like I'm watching reality. And so, like, I want a little bit of that reality. And I was feeling that in Dawn of Justice, and mm-hmm. I feel that in like Matt Reeves' Batman movie and the Dark Knight trilogy. I feel that like, yeah, there is a limit to the amount of money that he has access to, but then suddenly in this movie, there isn't. Like, he literally says, being rich is my superpower. So it's like, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a tough, I don't know. It's tough for me to get on board with, because you're talking about like the flying fox, right? Like, that's what, $500 million minimum to make one of those.
So, I mean, yeah. We're just ballparking here.
Yeah, yeah, right. And it's like, yeah, I'm sure he's a billionaire, but like, I don't know, man. That's just that's a
big chunk.
Yeah, it's a big chunk of money. So and nobody's tracking what the billionaire is doing with his money. mm-hmm. I don't know. So
he has the whole Wayne Aerospace in this movie, right? So by the harbor, he has Wayne Aerospace, which is just like, oh, you have your own like spaceship program, which is, I guess that's something in real life some guy with a lot of money does have. It's like, we've never really known Batman to just own basically what is like the world's fair of just like, oh, I have owned all these prototypes. I'm just going to work on them. And that's going to be tools for all these Justice League adventures now. And it's like, yeah. I didn't know you had access to that. Because at least in, like you said, the Dark Knight trilogy, it almost becomes like the Harry Potter, like Gringotts vault of just like, mm-hmm. oh, by the way, did you know you have access to all this stuff? And he's like, oh, I didn't know that. And then, of course, they're like, yeah, it's kind of questionable whether you should, but at least you have access to it. So there is a bit of like, I don't know. He has to pay a little respect to the wealth that he does have.
Right.
But yeah, in Dawn of Justice, he has access to these, you know, all this hardware, but they keep it kind of like minimal, and they keep the mm-hmm. Batcave kind of like slim, and to be like, yes, he's got a lot of money, but it's condensed into these little projects that he's doing. Whereas here, also, it's just like full fantasy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other iterations also like make a point to show the viewers that like at least they're like making an effort to justify the amount of money that Bruce Wayne has. Mm-hmm. You know, Nolan did it in every single one of those movies. Whenever they have him in the boardroom, Dawn of Justice had him in the office during a day. Mm-hmm. So like that, you know, that tells me it's okay. You're there. You're actually going to work. You're making money, dude. This one, it was like, he's on sabbatical and just burning through everything. That's probably why Alfred's like drinking the whole time at home, because he's like, dude, this guy's, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You had to buy all those Gillette razors for the trip.
And dude, the Gillette money coming in wasn't even anything. That was drop in the bucket.
Yeah. Yeah, there's something about Bruce Wayne's money that, like, I know that he's one of the three, like, richest men in the DCU, typically. But, like, there's something about, like, his money that I just think about. Yeah, like, it's a lot of money for him to protect Gotham. But as soon as you get him funding the Justice League, it, like, stretches credibility to for me.
Yeah.
Versus, like, if it was Mr. Terrific, I'd be like, oh, okay. Like, because I don't know why. I don't know what that is. I don't know why Mr. Terrific funding all of the technology of the Justice League and everything wouldn't bother me the way that it does when it's Bruce. I don't know why that is. Or, like, I don't know. I always thought a cool way to introduce the Justice League in a movie is to, like, have it be Lex Luthor who starts the Justice League and brings everybody together. Yeah. And then that, like, just as like an interesting, like, do we trust this guy? Cause we kind of do need this Justice League thing, that kind of thing, could be interesting, but yeah, Lex Luthor would be another one that I would be like, yeah, if Lex Luthor was funding the Justice League, I would be like, yeah, money's no object. It's fine. But for some reason when it's Bruce, I don't know. I like him to be a little more grounded than that.
I agree with that. I think my main focus when it comes to like Batman and Bruce Wayne in regards to just like the type of person that they are and the life that they lead, I always kind of err on the side of you are world's greatest detective, and you're like obsessive world's greatest detective, and you're not getting paid for these jobs that you're doing, you know. No one's writing you checks to find missing people or what have you, so you're just obsessing over your own hobby that's not giving you any you know, return on investment or anything, you know.
Yeah.
So because, and he's not like scientist, so it's not like he's, but he is, but he isn't. We don't see him in the lab.
But yeah, he's not like an inventor. Yeah,
yeah. That's where it is. He's not like inventing the things. He's just kind of taking the idea of like ninjutsu weaponry and just turning it into bat stuff. Right.
That's more of like a Lex Luthor or like Mr. Terrific thing. I think that's why it doesn't bother me when if they're involved, if their money is like endless, it doesn't bother me the way it does Bruce. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's when they start to introduce like Adam and stuff, like they do in this movie.
Ted Kord.
And of course we have Ted Kord. And like the Blue Beetle movie shows, like, he was like a crazy wacky inventor, all kinds of fun stuff. So like that, just, it's like there's more people out there, and I think but going back to Batman in this scenario, in this minute here, Batman, you know, he's brought all these people here to do this. You know, this is, he brought all these heroes. That was kind of his whole thing in this movie. So he's brought all these people together. They ultimately fail in this moment, and so there's, you know, you feel kind of bad for him a little bit because he's witnessing failure of all these people, and he's gotten all these people hurt, and he's failed the planet. So yes, it's a cool shot, but at the same time, it's like, oh damn, I feel so bad for you guys. Yeah,
with good reason, because what are you doing? You've been standing there looking down on everything.
Hey, he's been shooting a lot of parademons.
It took him a while to get to that spot. If we try to think about like where he was on like doing tower defense, and then to get to the like exhaust silo, what do we call that thing? What is that thing?
It was a reactor. It looks like a smokestack, but it's just. They're getting it mixed up between what a smokestack is and a reactor, because it's like supposed to be the core, but it obviously would not be the core if it was open like that. So it's just weird architecture to begin with. So, but yes, he is on the lip of it at the top of it, and you know that's the end of the movie when they do their little Justice League glory shot in next week. It's like that's what they'll be standing up on. But he shot the parademon that shot Barry Allen. Barry Allen's trying to recuperate. He doesn't get he can't build the charge back up to jolt the mother box so that Cyborg can hack into it and disrupt it. So that whole plan goes out the window. And so it's this total catastrophe here. And you'll see everyone kind of get obliterated. You see kind of like the vision that Cyborg had when he was going to activate the Mother Box to resurrect Superman. And then, of course, Barry Allen, through fear or, you know, some sense of urgency, he's able to tap into the Speed Force in this very moment and save himself from the blast. Which I really like the imagery. I like the kind of wave of debris and ruin and kind of like this whole space, ethereal energy around the shot. It's very pretty with like the reds and the blues and all that stuff. But I also just kind of like Ezra's performance, just showing how painful it is to kind of struggle through this, and that it's not just like there's no pain at all. Like he survived it. It's like he's kind of really bearing the weight of this massive shockwave. So I kind of like this little bit here at the tail end of this minute.
I like it a lot. I like that the Flash like actually had the thought to do whatever he's doing, vibrating so that none of the things or the actual event horizon doesn't affect him or whatever he's doing, displacing himself. I just think it's really cool. I also kind of feel like it's probably more of an instinctual thing rather than like use of a known power. It seems very much like, you know, again, Barry Allen, the kid. He sees a giant blast wave coming at him. He's like gonna put his hand up to like stop it. Just we saw Batman do something very similar in Dawn of Justice before Doomsday was, you know, gonna obliterate him. He put his hands up. It's like, oh, okay. So it seemed like very instinctual. And it just, you know, Flash and Speed Force kind of take over and displaces him or whatever.
Speed Force take the wheel here.
Yeah, truly.
Yeah. No, it is a cool little phase maneuver. And I would assume that, you know, in the early days of the Flash, you know, just finding out that you can run really fast, you'd almost find out that you can phase through things as well, because you'd almost run into something and, like you said, Nathan, by instinct, you just kind of phase through it because you're trying to protect yourself. And so you just start end up phasing through things, which I think is how he discovered the multiverse way back when, was just the phasing, right? And then that's how he ended up in a different Earth back then. It wasn't that he ran really fast or anything and changed the timeline, but it was that he...
I think you're right.
I think that, he like phased or something. But anyways.
In that like Flash of Two Worlds, that comic. I think
yes.
Right. Oh,
yes,
that's what I thought you were talking about this guy. I was like, when the heck did
no,
he
no,
ever
no,
do that?
No, no, no. No, I'm talking
just... yeah. Yes.
I was just thinking about phasing.
The phasing.
Yeah. We do see that, yeah, in the Flash movie. But no, we see it differently here. So it's cool, that little vibration. But yeah, I mean, I kind of liked the way that it was kind of illustrated, the phasing in the Flash movie. Mm-hmm. But here, it also looks really cool. Just kind of like this ghost image and then the debris going through it. It's very nice, very pretty. I like this. To me, this seems like a comic book panel where things are just kind of looking like space. Mm-hmm. And I just think
it's the only part of Zack Snyder's execution of the Flash in this that I like, that I actually am like, that's pretty cool. Pretty cool way of
just that with him doing
just the phasing. Yeah. Okay. I've never seen phasing look like that before, and it looks really cool, and I'm into it. That's it. That's the end.
Okay, we're counting that as a win.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think what we're getting now, because as of now in cinema with superheroes, we've seen a lot of speedsters. We've seen a lot of speedsters do different things, and do speed running in their own way. Illustrated in their own way, but whenever we get a chance to see things in real time, Wonder Woman and some of the Kryptonians in this cinematic universe, they get to do things in real time. And we're always kind of like, wow, that's awesome. It's cool and refreshing to see something in real time instead of having it to be in slow motion. And this phasing, you can kind of, I would consider it a real time ability instead of
It's like kind of slow, but not like it becomes in later minutes.
It works.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, to me, that's kind of what I find nice about it, is that it's refreshing to see something just not have to be super described in a way where you have to slow it down and show you that all this debris is passing through him, or in a way like that. So yeah, very cool. But besides that, yeah, everyone gets torn up in this minute. You see the destruction of Prajornov and the planet.
But yeah, other than that, everybody's dead. Anyway.
Yeah, it really, that's what happens in this 1 minute, the failure. But then it's like, oh, it's just Barry left. I've always liked the kind of Akira bomb. Like this white orb that like just kind of takes over the planet. It has that kind of like anime vibe to it when you see the explosion and you see all the silhouettes of the Prajornov and the little buildings and that kind of ripple effect. It for a Justice League movie, it plays off like just something incredibly epic from some sort of the Dark Age comic books that Zack Snyder was really into. It just has this total epic vibe to it, seeing like in just this minute this explosion here. And I like it. I do like the idea that the Justice League kind of fail in the movie, but there's a hero that's powerful enough to kind of turn things around. I like that the two kind of young characters, the Cyborg and the Flash, they are introduced in this movie and then they have to kind of grow up both as people and with their abilities. And we kind of see that with the Flash here. It's like, yeah, you're not just here. You know, there's a part that you've been working on and you kind of see it come to fruition here in this moment that I really like.
I guess. I don't like how young the Flash is. I just think it's a bad idea. It's a bad move.
I don't know if Barry should have been that young.
Right.
That's my holdup. And it's because it goes against everything that like I was taught.
Yeah. He's just very childish in this movie. I mean, not as bad as the theatrical cut, but still pretty childish. And it just doesn't, I don't know. The idea that like Barry has to grow up, I'm like, and you were like, yeah, like him and Cyborg both do this. And I'm like, yeah, but that's the problem. Like they shouldn't both do it. Only one of them should have that arc. Cyborg clearly should be the one that has that arc. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it's the Flash also, I don't know. It just feels kind of lazy to me. Like, I guess we gotta make this movie somehow. So we haven't figured out any other better version of the Flash. And so this is what we're going to do. We're going to make him a kid. And I don't know. It just doesn't work for me, but
yeah, no, I mean,
more on that the rest of the week. I assume.
Yeah, totally. We could totally get more into that, especially from what we hear in tomorrow's minute. So yeah. Before we wrap up, anyone else have any notes for this one?
Not for this one. No.
Cool.
Nope.
All right, we're going to wrap up for today. If you've enjoyed today's show, please consider leaving a 5-star review. It really does help the show and helps new listeners discover our show as well. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can chat with us on Twitter at DCEUMinute. And if you'd like to hear more bonus content, we also have a Patreon for just $3 with tons of other podcasts to listen to. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you on the next one here on DC Cinematic Minute.